Originals.
This is Defending in Numbers.
Hello, 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 and welcome to Defending in Numbers, the football podcast, where we walk down the corridor of uncertainty, pretending to know a little bit more about football than we actually do. My name is Rob Armstrong, a pretender. I know nothing, but I tell you who does know something. Hot take, Jake the Snake Entwistle. Jake, how are you?
Yeah, I'm great. It's good to be back. And I'm seeing you for the first time post-surgery.
Post-surgery, and I'm a new man.
You're going to be doing kickboxing videos on Instagram with speedy recoveries like Zlatan.
Absolutely, absolutely. snails don't recover like humans. And in the other corner of the room, we've got the return of the big dog in the yard, Adam Boltwood.
Thank you. How are you? Rob, it's great to be here. It's great to be back.
The big dog in the yard.
What a lovely intro, just wincing. Yeah, just cringing slightly.
Enjoy it.
Thank you. It's better than snail. I'll take big dog.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Big dogs don't recover like humans or lions or snails.
True. It's very true.
And for you out there, you are probably listening on some kind of thing that you listen to podcasts on, which may be Deezer, it may be iTunes or all the other places where you find your podcast. Don't forget, share it, subscribe, review it, do all the good stuff. In fact, do it right now while we move on to the first section, Week by Numbers.
The Week by Numbers.
All right, then. Where better to start than the old Manchester Derby and the number 456, which is the number of days between Man United's two defeats at home to Man City. That's the only defeat they've had at home for all that time. And it's both of them bookended by Manchester City, unbeaten for 40 games in between the two. And frankly, it looked pretty comprehensive, didn't it, Boltwood?
Yeah, I think it did. I think, now it's as well 14 games unbeaten for Manchester City in a single season.
It's the record.
Yeah, it's wins as well. It's not just unbeaten. Yeah.
And only Arsenal matched that, but of course that was over two seasons. So I think it's very impressive for Manchester City. I think it is quite embarrassing for Manchester United, though. I think, as you say, it was pretty comprehensive. The scoreline doesn't necessarily reflect how dominant City were. And I think, you know, questions are being asked now of Jose Mourinho. I was sort of trying to look up last night how expensive the squads were of both teams. And I think Manchester City's is only £63 million more expensive than Manchester United's. And yet, Pep Guardiola's got them playing this incredible football. So I don't think, you know, Mourinho can have that excuse of the financial benefit or the financial advantage that Manchester City have. They're obviously two different managers with two different approaches, and yes, that's worked for Mourinho in the past and it still can be effective, but I think it's embarrassing for the rivals Manchester City to come to Manchester United, to come to Old Trafford and play like that and essentially play Manchester United off the park. So I think it's a bad day all in all for Manchester United.
A mere £63 million difference, Jake. What is that?
Kevin De Bruyne or something?
Between friends.
Yeah, Kevin De Bruyne and a bit, isn't it? But I completely agree with that. It was sort of the manner of the defeat. It was like that's what's got the backlash, hasn't it, from the Man United faithful and the pundits that are watching on. They just couldn't believe that. I saw someone making the comparisons like Fabian Delph was at left back and like Fernandinho is a good player, but he's not that Barcelona side that played Man United off the park in that Champions League final. I think Pep referenced that being one of his most dominant ever displays, and that was when you watch that back. Barcelona flooded forward and Man United at that time, obviously not under Jose Mourinho then, they had to sit back and they couldn't deal with it. But this Man City side, for as good as they are, it was almost giving them too much respect. Pogba was a massive miss. He is Man United's one player that sort of is on par with those Kevin De Bruyne, that classy...
Makes them tick.
Yeah, that classy player they've got in midfield. So he was a big miss. But the fact that Man City's goalies having more touches than any of Man United's attackers in the game, Edison had 41 and he made an incredible double save. He sort of took the spotlight from De Gea.
I'm holding my hands up in the studio here. A bit of an unpopular opinion, but a little bit like the De Gea one in that I think it was a bad finish more than it was.
Yeah,
I think Sanchez
should have scored last week more than it was a great save. And I think Lukaku definitely should have scored this week more than... I mean, yeah, like you say, it was literally down the old trachea.
Yeah,
I think that speaks to what you're saying there, Jake, in terms of there are vulnerabilities there for Manchester City. And they almost scored at the end there to equalise at Manchester United, which I think would have been snatching a point. But I think overall in the game, Manchester United were too passive. You know, they had to win this game and really to close the gap to make this a real title race. And they didn't really show any sign that they were willing and could do that.
What do you think about this, all the talk of the squads they've inherited as well? Because you were talking about the tiny sort of difference of the money. I think people are saying, you know, if Pep Guardiola had inherited the squad that Jose Mourinho had, like, how successful do you think they could have been with that team?
But it's about, so Pep Guardiola inherited a side that was their defence, Man City's defence that he got was woeful, and we saw that last season.
It still kind of is.
Yeah, it is, but again, he fixed those problem areas where, we've mentioned it before, like the fullbacks have become so key, and the fact that Fabian Delph has been used in this left-back role, he's not even going to be the main guy.
He's so northern-sounding as well. I'm so shocked. Every time he comes out for the interview, he's the most northern-sounding man on earth.
He's got the strong Brummie accent, isn't he? But I don't think, like Jose Mourinho, again, he wanted, one of his big targets in the summer was apparently Ivan Perisic, and they've missed that sort of, these Jose Mourinho players that are 6'4" plus and big, but yeah. Perisic is the one, when you watch him for Inter Milan, he's been incredible this season as well. He recently got his first hat-trick in a while, and he's this both-footed winger that can go either way, but can also win an aerial duel and take a player on, and they've missed that. They've sort of, their left-hand side where they've got Rashford and Martial, if Pep Guardiola inherited those two, could you imagine what they were doing in a front three? What they would be doing now, he would be playing them both at the same time. Mm. And I feel sorry for Rashford and Martial because I rate them very highly. But at the moment, again, it's Jose Mourinho's style. So we can't just say, don't play that way. He's won trophies. It's not about that. But for a player like Marcus Rashford, you must look across and think, what it would be like to have 60% possession every game and I get to take players on and get a few shots on goal. Rashford showed he was clinical and punished the one mistake, again, by Delph, who isn't the left back. But Man United didn't really have any other shots other than that.
I think it's the same for Lukaku. You know, all the stats that are doing the rounds, he scored one goal in his past 9 games, is it? Considering how good the start he had, that's a very poor return. But if they did switch managers, you know, if Guardiola had Lukaku, if he had Rashford, as you're saying, I think you'd see a massive improvement because it is down to the way Manchester United play under Mourinho.
Would they be better with Ibrahimovic on the pitch? The way they play? Because he's basically like they want Lukaku, who,
what was it,
to be fair, the geezer is more than a lump.
What
right?
did the City technical staff allegedly say about Zlatan? This came out last night.
He's not moving around
anymore. Yeah, he's not moving around. He's like, you're good, but you're not moving around. He's got a real lack of ability, obviously, because he's, what, 35 now? Is he 36? I don't think that would necessarily improve them. And I think, again, it goes back to the system that Mourinho's playing. It doesn't suit someone like Lukaku. I don't think it's necessarily playing to his advantages right now. It's not benefiting him in sort of, you know, helping him rediscover his form. And I don't think if you just switched in Zlatan, it would necessarily improve it significantly.
Yeah, I think they need someone like Lukaku up front because he's got pace. The way when you play a counter-attacking team, you need an outlet. So if they've got Zlatan Ibrahimovic, you're lumping it up to him. You've either got to play two people really close to him, and that's when you start playing a 3-5-2 or a 3-4-3, and you've got Lingard and Rashford or Martial and Rashford behind. But they need that outlet. You saw in the Manchester derby, Lukaku was the only one.
Yeah,
it was like two banks of four. Four and a five, and then Lukaku miles away.
I think as well.
So I feel sorry for him.
Yeah.
He's getting blasted for his big game. Like it's 313 minutes per goal against big six size, but he's played in teams where they're not setting out for score. He's getting one chance, and if he misses, he gets slammed for it.
He has as well in his defence. You know, I think he was crucial to the way Manchester United beat Arsenal last week. He wasn't directly involved with an assist necessarily or a goal, but I think he did contribute to the victory. He got the assist against Spurs as well at Old Trafford. When
he got two assists against Man City, technically.
Yeah, technically. I mean, what's everyone chatting about? He's proven wrong, man.
All right, let's move on to the next number, and that's number 5. And let's talk about the Champions League draw. We've got 5 teams from England in it. And the draw was Juventus have got Spurs. Sorry, I don't know why I said we've got the English teams, then start with Juventus. It's Spurs have got Juventus, Man City Spurs. Have got Basel, or Basel.
Yeah.
Boom, boom.
Yeah.
Liverpool have got Porto, Man United have got Sevilla, and Chelsea have got Barcelona. And I think there's a few really decent ties in there. And obviously, doesn't involve an English team, but let's not forget PSG versus Real Madrid also got thrown up in there.
The big one, yeah.
I think probably, looking at it, the tie of the round, the two ties of the round, Chelsea-Barcelona and PSG-Real Madrid, is that a fair...
Spurs-Juventus, I think it's going to be. But yeah, you're probably right. I'll give you that.
Juventus have some weird record against English teams, don't they?
Yeah, so Juventus have been knocked out in each of their last five knockout ties against English sides, which does sort of give me hope as a Spurs fan that that Mauricio Pochettino can knock them out again. You know, the last time Spurs played an Italian side, well, last time they were in the Champions League at this stage was against AC Milan, thanks to big Peter Crouchy. We beat them 1-0. So I think, you know, it all bodes well. You know, history is on Spurs' side.
Written in the stars.
I mean, I think we're going to come on to talk about winter breaks soon, which I think gives Juventus a massive advantage. They're third in Serie A at the moment, but I think by February, when these ties roll around, they're going to be massively at their peak. Whereas Spurs, you know, are they going to be absolutely exhausted? They're going to be flat on their feet. They've got a really
tough
schedule.
Is that a Spurs fan with an excuse?
I'm just trying to give it some context. I'm trying to appreciate, you know, Juventus might be in better shape than Spurs, but at the same time, you know, it was confirmed yesterday that Toby Alderweireld is going to be back for Spurs in February. I think that could be a massive plus for Mauricio Pochettino because he's been such a huge miss when he's been injured with his hamstring.
You played him in a pre-season friendly, though, didn't you? Didn't Moussa Sissoko get man of the match?
I mean, there's a first time for everything. There is a first time for everything.
Yeah, even a broken, what is it, broken clock's right twice a day. Jay, is this the first time there's been five English teams? It must be, right?
It's the first time any nation has had five in the knockout stages.
When was the last time we even had four?
So that was in 2006-07.
Which is long?
Yeah, so it's been ages. It was that era when even Arsenal were doing well.
Yeah.
The Champions League, yeah. So it's funny coincidence that they're not in it this season. They get five in the knockout round. Yeah. But that Chelsea-Barcelona tie, I think, in terms of the English ones, is the standout one. And there was all the stats going around before the draw was made that it was like a 40% likelihood that they would draw each other, just based on, because Chelsea are the only English team that finished second in the end. So you knew that one was coming out in the hat, and there's so many numbers behind that one to make it exciting. Obviously, not
give
even
me
just,
something. We're defending
yeah,
in numbers,
exactly.
Jake.
Give so me some numbers. So Chelsea and Barcelona are meeting for the sixth time in the knockout stage, which is only bettered by Real Madrid, Bayern Munich, who are obviously the parents of the Champions League almost. They're the perennials in it. But the one that is sort of giving Chelsea fans hope, because obviously they're a bit up and down at the moment. They looked good against Huddersfield recently, but again, they struggled against West Ham. But the one stat that's giving everyone hope is that Messi has faced Chelsea eight times and not scored a goal. And that's his worst record against any
club. I feel
like
this is written for Lionel Messi. Just put that to bed.
Just ruined. Because he's eight times, and he's won one game. So it's one win, five draws, two and two defeats. So, yeah, maybe there's another Torres moment brewing for that one, but that Chelsea-Barcelona tie. Chelsea is set out to do well against a possession side. They play best when they are counter-attacking. You know Conte is going to... I've seen a lot of jokes about what players he's going to play on what formation, but you know it's going to be Morata, Hazard behind him, and then Bakayoko, Kante, Fabregas, maybe even Drinkwater in there and just hit him on the break.
I'd say out of all the English teams, Juventus Spurs is a bit of a maybe.
Depends.
But I would say other than Chelsea, I think they would all expect to go through. Juventus are not the team they have been for the last few years. I feel like...
Well, so they were finalists last year, though, weren't they?
Yeah.
So it's whether Juventus... Again, in Serie A, it's been really odd because they're one of the top scorers in Serie A, but they're not top for once. They drew recently with Inter Milan, which suits Inter Milan down to a ground. So, whether Juventus find that little spark... Dybala hasn't scored in the Champions League yet.
They haven't had a great Champions League campaign either, have they? They've struggled a little bit.
Well, obviously, they finished second to draw Spurs in the first place.
Yeah,
so,
as opposed to Spurs, who came top of the group of death.
Yeah. Fuming. Absolutely fuming. I think Spurs have got the beating of Juventus this month. Maybe that's just my optimism as a Spurs fan. But I think, I think every English team is going to go through apart from maybe Chelsea. I think Barcelona probably got
that. You reckon? Okay, well, let's move on to the next number. 27.1 million, and that's the wage bill of Burnley. According to James Tucker. No, James Tucker in the Telegraph. James Tucker. They're in the Champions League places. What's happening over at Burnley?
It's mental, isn't it? Incredible stuff, I think.
Tough place to go.
It is. I think, you know, last season, famously, it was their home form which sustained them, that sort of kept them in the league, as it were. Now their away form as well is fantastic as well. So what Sean Dyche is doing is really impressive. I think, however, that it's all based on their defence. You know, they've got an absolutely incredible defence. They've kept 8 clean sheets this season. Only Manchester United have more. I think the only worry for them is going to be they've got less goals than they've played games, essentially. You know, of the 8 home wins they've got this season, 7 of them are 1-0 wins. Last night's winner against... Who was it against?
Watford, wasn't it?
No. Burnley was Stoke.
That's
against
it.
Against Stoke. It came in the 86th minute, 89th minute, I think, very late on. Mm. So I think...
But that's the pedigree of champions, Boltwood.
Yeah. I think it suggests that, as good as this is, I don't necessarily think it's sustainable for Burnley to keep this up in the second half of the season. I don't want to be too negative, though, because, I mean, we all want to see Sean Dyche at the Camp Nou next year, taking on Barcelona. But, yeah, I just don't think it's going to last as impressive as it has been for Burnley.
Well, let's compare them to... So, Burnley are fourth. Wage bill, as I said, £27.1 million. Liverpool, 1 point behind them, £208.3 million. Arsenal, 2 points behind them, £199.4 million. Spurs, 3 points behind them,
plucky
Spurs, £100 million. So yeah.
God, Spurs, they're making... punching above their weight, aren't they?
Yeah. God. I think whatever happens, really, you have to look at how... What about just, how far wrong can the Burnley season go from here?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like, a massive success either way.
Yeah.
I mean, I've just said it's unsustainable and, you know, I think it is. But at the same time, could they do it? Could they almost do a Leicester in that qualifying for the top four? It would be an absolutely humongous achievement. Mm. I mean, it would be incredible.
The thing is with those, so that those 8 home wins, the 7 in 2017 that have been by 1-0, that's like, that's classic Burnley. But... There are sort of worrying numbers behind it, and they're worrying. And then you look at the flip side and you think, oh, well, because they've actually they've allowed the most shots per game against them in the Premier League. And I think we've spoken that about before. It might have been used in a stat showdown. But so they average 16.4 shots against them per game. But when you start looking at the expected goals against and how many goals they should be conceding, they're 11th in terms of that. And they've got... depending where you look, again, the models vary, but it's around 2021, and that's the same as Manchester United. Wow. So the way they're just camping on the edge of their box, or their hyper defensive play, people are just having to pepper them from far out, and obviously that's not a sustainable way to score goals. So looking at the numbers of Burnley, you think, oh wow, they're going to lose 4-0 one day, the amount of shots. But then you realise that Sean Dyche has set them up in a way that restricts teams. The Arsenal game recently, Arsenal had a lot of shots, but they needed a 90th minute penalty to win. So there's incredible stuff behind them, and as you said, 16 goals scored is very worrying. Everyone else in the top 10, and that's with the game in hand, obviously, because we're recording this on the Wednesday before the next round of fixtures, everyone else in the top 10 has got 20 plus goals. But they've only conceded 12. But only the Manchester clubs have less than that.
Yeah. At the same time, I think the only top 10 side they haven't played yet is Manchester United. I think I'm right in saying that. And yet, this is their record. So I think, you know, it's hugely impressive.
Well, fourth in the Premier League, Burnley. Fourth in La Liga, Real Madrid. Same points.
Yeah, they're equivalent.
Yeah.
Well, talking of sweet defences. That's right, sweet defences. Let's move on to the next number, which is 122. And that's the number of clean sheets Atletico Madrid have kept in La Liga in 227 games under Diego Simeone. The man is, let's face it, a lunatic. And clearly puts the fear of God into his defence. And, you know, it looks like it's happening again. Atletico, probably not title challengers this year, but... Again, an almost impossible team to beat. How good is Diego Simeone in terms of dragging the absolute best out of what he's got in front of him?
So I think they could be title challengers this year, mainly because of the way they dropped out of the Champions League. So that obviously doesn't bode well for him. He set a club record unbeaten run in La Liga, 19 games. But they were in a tough group, but they didn't manage to get out of it. Now they're in the Europa League. Whether he goes towards that and looks to win that or then puts all his eggs in the league of Barca is yet to be seen. But I think there's no doubting that he's obviously a good manager. That side, to keep that many clean sheets, they've had 41-0 wins in La Liga, which is nearly 30% of their wins under Simeone in that time. So again, he's got a formula and it works. They've always had an incredible goalkeeper. under Simeone, they've had Courtois, now Jan Oblak, who I...
Their recruitment in general seems to be pretty good because they're always picking up these quality strikers. Like off the bat, top of my head, you think your Griezmanns, Diego Costas, your Torres is the first time round, Falcao,
Aguero,
yeah, of course. So that I mean, that's just up front. Yeah. Like you say, they've always got an incredible goalkeeper. So
yeah, I think this is, it goes to what Jake was saying there. I think their defence is incredible, but as you're pointing there about their recruitment, they've got Diego Costa coming back in January. So I think that's going to be a massive impact for them. As good as they've been defensively, Antoine Griezmann has struggled so far this season. Costa coming in, I think they could be a real force in the new year, and I think they could be competing for the Liga title as well.
They'll get back to that 4-4-2 when they've got two. Like at the moment, they're sort of, Griezmann, like, is an incredible player, but he's not that out and out striker. They pair him with Gamero, who's sort of like the Liga's version of Jamie Vardy, in a sense that he'll run in behind all the time and rely on Griezmann to link up with him. But with
and
Diego,
his wife's in the jungle.
With Diego Costa, they'll have that sort of, Griezmann can then do both and rely on Diego Costa to be sort of the battering ram and create space for him. But again, the Griezmann, whether he stays at Atletico, there's a lot of interest in him.
I like the comparisons of, you know, Gamero's the Liga Vardy. You've got Deitch's basically.
I love the Simeone. Idea of Simeone being an Argentinian Deitch.
Donde
está la defense.
So they're doing well, and I think they've got Vitolo coming back as well. There was a transfer scandal in the summer. So
a scandal, Jake. Yeah. Why was it a scandal?
Well, it was because he signed a contract and then said actually no, and now he's gone on loan to avoid.
Oh dear.
The Atletico Madrid transfer ban that they had. Presidents wanted to file stuff against him, so he's going to be coming back. Yeah, exactly. So he's going to be coming back under a dark cloud. But they're getting players in January that they'll need, and I think because they are out of the Champions League, they could be Barcelona's closest contenders. Sustained pressure in La Liga this season, and you never know. We might end up seeing him in the Premier League with Sean Dyche.
I hope so. Donde está la Premier League title?
Or vice versa. Dyche could go to La Liga.
Yeah. You
imagine Real Madrid next.
All right. And the next number is the number one. And Boltwood, we're going to talk about your friend, Mauricio Pochettino, or should I call him Mafraudio Fraudatino?
Wow.
Because that's the number of wins away from home against the Premier League Big Six since joining Spurs. One win in 17 games against the Big Six away. That, to me, seems like the reason you aren't winning anything. You know what I mean? Like, you're really good, and you win that thing every year. It's like, oh, they've got the most points in the calendar year. You've won that for the last, like, 3 years.
Yeah.
But you haven't won any silverware, Boltwood, and I think that might be why.
We won the putting the pressure on trophy 2 years ago. I think it's fine.
The big one.
It's a good point you make. It's not a great record away against the top six. However, I'd argue that, you know, it's been Spurs' home form that has propelled them into title challenges in those past two seasons. This season, obviously, is a different situation at Wembley. We've dropped more points at Wembley already.
We've got a new stadium as well.
Yeah, I think that's a different story. I think Wembley is a difficult factor to contend with. We've dropped more points at Wembley this season already than we did in the entirety of last season. We're incredible White Hart Lane. So, I mean, away from home again at City this weekend, I don't think the omens bode well looking at that stat. I think, you know, as we mentioned earlier, 14 Premier League wins in a row, which is a record. Could it be 15 this week? Potentially. I think Spurs are struggling, as I mentioned earlier, without Toby Alderweireld. They average 2.1 points per game with him compared to 1.6 points without him. And obviously Spurs' form defensively has been very poor in the last couple of weeks without him. We've got one win in our last five. So I'm not massively optimistic with him in the team. You know, playing a back three, we look a much more solid, much more high-functioning unit than we do when we go to back four, which is what we're currently playing without him. We're also missing Victor Wanyama as well, I think adds a real steal in midfield that, you know, we're just not the same team without him. However, you know, I'll try and be optimistic and say, you know, we've beat Nicosia, we've beat Stoke as well, 5-1. We're gaining momentum. I know they're not at the same quality. But, you know, I think Spurs' players, we're trying to play ourselves back into form, especially attacking players. Christian Eriksen, Ali, etc., haven't performed in recent weeks, and the goal-scoring burden has been left on Harry Kane. Kane now is back among the goals, now he's back from his injury. Heung-min Son as well is performing really well. So I think there's reasons for potential optimism.
So, Apoel Nicosia and Stoke are one thing, but Spurs...
We're recording this on the morning of the Brighton game. We're going to beat them as well. It's three in a row.
So those, and possibly Brighton. That's one thing. What about Man City in God mode? Do Spurs have the capability to beat them?
Well, surprisingly, I think this could be the sort of game they need, because their wins this season against big teams have been against teams that love possession. Two really good performances against Real Madrid, where Real Madrid had most of the ball. Real Madrid pass accuracy was 90% over the thing. Possession was probably closer to 60 than it was 50. And against Liverpool, they did the same thing. They just absolutely blitzed them on the counter-attack. Adam mentioned Son there, who's been great since he's come into the team. And he is the most important when they play this heavy counter-attacking style. He's the one real player they've got with pace, I'd say, in that front line.
Yeah, 100%.
Dele Alli is sort of a ghost in the fact that he'll roam in the final third and pick up. Again, he's one player that, yeah, hasn't had the same output in terms of goals and assists this season, but he's got a couple of little clutch assists in the last few games, and I think that's the stuff.
Clutch.
That's the type of player he is, though. Dele Alli, I think, is very unique talent in the way that there's all this argument that he's not a midfielder, not a forward.
Mm.
He floats around, and while Christian Eriksen is clearly the playmaker, Dele Alli doesn't create 10 chances a game, but he'll create one chance and it'll be the assist. Mm. So when you play a counter-attacking side, you've got a player that can deliver a final ball when it matters. He's missed a couple of chances, so this is...
How dare
I'm sort of he's sort of not helping me out here, but I believe that he can suit this style. And then you've got Son, who we saw against Liverpool, can just fly up the pitch.
Mm.
Harry Kane this season has got much better at carrying the ball himself.
Mm.
He'll love it if Mangala plays, because Mangala is quite clumsy.
Eloquim.
And
yeah.
The Quim.
Yeah.
The quivering Quim.
So he will be quivering if Harry Kane's up against him, who's also chasing that calendar year goal scoring record
indeed,
as well.
He is indeed. So he's not going to break against City. But
before the Brighton game, he's on 33.
Yes.
Alan Shearer's 36.
I think, as Jake says, I think potentially there's vulnerabilities that Tottenham could take advantage of. It's going to be a very interesting tactical matchup between Pochettino, between Guardiola. I think hopefully, the way Manchester City play, there'll be space behind Kyle Walker for Heung-min Son to go into on that left-hand side. I think that could be an area where Spurs can target Manchester City. But yeah, I'm not massively confident.
Spurs have actually scored 2 goals against City in the last 3 Premier League, in each of the last Premier League meetings.
I'm feeling good. Every time Jake opens his mouth, I'm feeling pretty good.
So, they're, as I said, I think this could be a game that it allows Pochettino to withdraw himself again.
Mm.
The Wembley, you mentioned the home form being one of the factors that saw Spurs title push. I'd agree, but because of this record, I also think the fact that they absolutely pummeled every minnow last season.
Yeah.
They beat Leicester, 7-0, 7-1. And then this season they lost. I think that's the one that's tripping them up. So now they need to turn this stat around.
Mm.
He needs to get a result away to Man City. It's unlikely, but I think the style of play and the formation that he'll play could dictate that there could be goals in this game, and Tottenham could be behind.
All right, but give me a little prediction then. Is the milk going to be flowing for Man City at the end of the game, or is it?
Is it 4-2-1 wins they've had in a row?
Yeah,
Manchester City. I think it's going to be 2-1 again, but it's going to be 2-1 Spurs.
No dairy for the Man City lads. No, what about you, Jake?
I think Spurs will continue their habit that I just mentioned of scoring a couple of goals against Man City. Man City have looked a bit shaky, but not played the best teams, or teams that don't even want to attack. So I think it will be high scoring, and I think it will be 3-2 to Man City.
It's going to be 3 pints dropped for Man City.
Froze that full screen.
Sorry,
and you can listen to that horrible cringe fest on Deezer 5:30 on Saturday. That's Man City versus Spurs. We've got it on the Deezer app. This is a Deezer podcast. You should have the Deezer app.
Yep.
And if you're out and about, get it in your ears. Get it in your ear holes. All that sweet flowing milk of the Man City success. Three pints, for God's sake. Let's move on to the next section. I'm embarrassed to ask. All right, then. It's that time of year where we get the managers moaning that we don't have a winter break in England. And I don't really know. Like, I don't notice when other like countries are on their winter break. How long are these winter breaks? And how much difference do they actually make? Because as far as I'm aware, they're kind of rolled out as an excuse about February time every year by any manager who crashes out of Europe. But, you know, when we were, like you said earlier, that sort of 2007, 2008, when every team in the Champions League semi-finals was English, basically, we didn't have a winter break then. Everything was fine. So is this kind of a recent complaint of managers because English teams aren't as good as they used to be? Or is it a legitimate thing?
I think, so first of all, we'll just say sort of the main leagues that have it. Obviously, Bundesliga, Liga, and Serie A, La Liga, and actually SPFL have now got one that was introduced last season. Mm-hmm. But what I found quite interesting when I was looking at SPFL, these winter... Scottish
Premier League. GTFO, stuff. SPFL.
Yeah, so they've actually got one now. And what I found interesting when looking at these was the fact that they're not actually that long.
Yeah.
You look at some of them. So Bundesliga is the longest this season, which is 22 days long, and it starts on the 20th of December.
God, it's like teachers.
Then La Liga have got the second longest, of the big five leagues anyway. Liga 1, sorry, which is 16 days, and that starts on the same day. Then Serie A have got a post-January winter break, which starts on the 6th, and that's 14 days. And La Liga's winter break is only 11 days long.
I feel like most of those countries get pretty cold. Spain don't have an excuse. Where does it get cold in Spain? Nowhere,
no
really.
There's no stats flyers there to back up your
temperature.
No.
Give me temperature stats. That's right. Like Scotland. Scotland have a 19-day break, right? But, you know, I think they pretty much had that anyway because they would get snowed off, don't they?
Sort of forced. They just took that upon itself. That was actually, they weren't that keen on it. There was a lot of sort of people that didn't want the winter break because it was introduced last season and they said, yeah, we'll continue it. It did well. So, but that was meant with a bit of as much as you can get of a backlash against a winter break, but it had that sort of negative approach. But yeah, I just think 11 days for a winter break, La Liga. If English managers are clamouring over, that's two fixtures.
Yeah.
I suppose it's two, maybe three fixtures in the English calendar, but still.
To be fair, around Christmas, it's pretty congested though, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's the thing. I think it's uniquely congested over Christmas. I think the fatigue builds up. And you look at that, and you look at the Serie A's break from the 6th of January to the 21st of January. It's 14 days. So, yeah, again, you know, that's two potentially three games off, as it were. As we mentioned earlier, the Champions League ties are on February the 13th. I think that's got to have a massive impact, really. I think Juventus is going to be much fresher.
I'm just trying to get the excuse back. 3 months early.
But I'm just trying to, you know, I think it does make an impact. At the same time, the thing that's always sort of brought up is, you know, do we really want to give up our New Year's Boxing Day, all this football? It's great. You get to watch all these games, etc. I think, you know, it's probably a selfish reasoning. I think if it were for the good of, you know, English teams in Europe, you know, the World Cup as well coming up next year, I think it would be something to look at introducing. I think it does have an impact.
I completely forgot. Of course, England managers use it as an excuse as well, don't they? Oh, yeah, we're never going to win the World Cup. We don't have a winter break.
That's why we need to keep it. Because if we don't win, we can say it's because of the winter break. And if we do win, we can say, without a winter break, we've done it. That's how good we are.
Where's my excuse when Spurs crash out of the Champions League if we don't have a winter break? But I think, you know, it was mentioned yesterday, the fixture congestion that both Spurs and Chelsea are going to be facing in February. Yeah. Again, you mentioned it there, Christmas, the games all pile up. I just think it's ridiculous, really, when you think about it, the amount of games, the amount of minutes these players have to play when, you know, I know they're not huge breaks, 11 days, as you mentioned, in the Liga, but I think it does have an impact.
And as well, they're not going away and just, it's not a winter break in terms of going away and doing nothing. Yeah. A lot of this, it's just the games that get taken away.
Just sit on the sofa.
Yeah, exactly. Sitting there eating turkey.
They have, a lot of teams go and do warm weather training camps, and a lot of teams then play friendlies. And so you're playing games. It's a winter break in the fact that you don't have competitive fixtures, and that's about it. And they can take their toll. The fact that you don't have to think about swapping your team around, like Jurgen Klopp recently has been sort of lambasted for his squad selection and chopping and changing. But his excuse and his reasoning, which I agree with, will be, I've got about 14 fixtures in 14 days coming up. It almost turns out to be like that. So you have to swap and yeah, that Merseyside derby, they dominated it, as he said, and that without a penalty, no one would have said a thing. But
I mean, fell right into Big Sam's hands. Yeah, Sam's big sweaty hands.
There was some news last year. I think it was Richard Scudamore was talking about bringing in a winter break in the Premier League. I mean, it's not something you'd have to worry about as a West Ham fan playing in Europe. But would you rather have the football over Christmas and that festive feast, as it were, of football, or would you rather see English teams potentially have that benefit in Europe?
I personally,
or the World Cup,
could not care less how tired the players are or about teams doing better in Europe. I'm a football fan. I want to see more football.
Right. You know, what about an England fan? As an England fan, you're going to the World Cup. Do you not think that would have an impact, benefit?
It won't, 6 months later.
Yeah, but like,
do you think 11 days off
your season? 11 days longer
of,
as well.
11 days of training in like Dubai or something is going to make them win the bloody World Cup? Of course, it's not.
Well,
Germany, Bundesliga have the longest one, and they're the best national team right now. So.
Boom.
Yeah, but that's because they've got really good players.
That get arrest.
Dele Alli.
Not being funny, but you're like, you can give Phil Jagielka all the winter training in Dubai you like. It's still not going to be like bloody I can't even think of a good German player. He's not going to be Mesut Özil at the end of it, is he?
Yeah, if he was Mesut Özil,
if Phil Jagielka turned into one of the best number 10s in world football, that would be quite incredible.
There's a point to prove here. I'm going to get onto Phil Jagielka's agent. I'm going to take him away for winter training camp. You'll see.
There's going to be like an inverse Rocky training montage of Jagielka sweating in Dubai.
It's going to be like the German and the English one. Rocky IV. They've got like the most obvious Cold War metaphor ever.
It's going to be like that.
Germany versus England. It's going to be like the English guy just eating pies in Dubai and the German guy's training really hard.
Nothing like a good stereotype. No, I think, we'll see.
Or you could, if it's that big a problem, just do the Kevin Nolan and get a red card on the 16th of January.
There you go.
16th of December every single year.
That's the English win. That is the English winter break.
I think he played for West Ham for 3 years. I don't think he ever played a Boxing Day game for us. I think he might have been suspended three
ahead
or four years in a row.
Ahead of his time, isn't he?
Exactly.
Pioneer.
He is. He's like one of those sort of sports geniuses, like Kevin Nolan. That's why they've got him in at Notts County or wherever he is. They're all just going to get sent off. They're going to get a match abandoned.
Just give the 3-0 wins away.
All right, then, let's move on to the next section. Who's this fella?
Who's this fella?
Okay, we've been doing a lot of talking about teams in Europe, and I don't want to leave poor old Jakey Entwistle and his Arsenal, beloved Arsenal, behind. So let's talk about the team they've drawn in the Europa League. And this comes with a Swedish umlaut. And I'm not sure what difference that makes to the O, but I'm going to make a guess that it goes Osterund. Osterund.
That's pretty good.
I reckon
that's bang on. And their manager, Graham Potter, who is the only English manager in Europe. But I don't know who he is. When's he going to end up at, like, West Brom?
Well, that's the thing.
When they beat Arsenal, he's going to be on the
That's the thing. It's
get him on the plane.
He's actually been in this job for a while now. I think it was 2010 that he first became Osterund manager, and they were in the fourth tier of Swedish football back then. So they've undergone an incredible transformation under him, and he deserves massive credit. And I think this is sort of, again, we saw those Champions League ties. They were sort of the fairy tale ones, or at least the Chelsea-Barcelona, everyone wanted that to happen, PSG-Real Madrid. This is one that's, for English football, is going to be really interesting because, as you said, he's the only English manager in European competition. Might be joined by Sean Dyche next year. But
Don Dyche to Europe.
he's in it, and Arsenal are the only English team in the Europa League this season. So we're carrying the Premier League's light there. But one thing in particular about this team and Graham Potter's team in general is that they were actually founded after Arsene Wenger took charge of Arsenal.
Good God.
So, wow.
Talk to him about the history of Osterund.
Oh, it's 1996.
They ain't got no history.
He's been there for the...
Don't they used to their history.
He's been there for the most part of it. And he's getting lots of plaudits for the fact that he's transformed a lot of players that have been sort of thrown away by other clubs. Their captain was actually blacklisted in the Swedish league because he was causing so many issues to clubs that were employing him, and now he's captain of Graham Potter's team. So he's got a background in sort of the emotional psychology of management and coaching and stuff, and he's had a strange career path. He retired earlier than you would have thought, because And he's quoted as saying that people didn't understand his sort of technical abilities or how to get the best out of him, and went into coaching. And yeah, he's been at Ostron for seven years now. And the fact that they're the current cup holders in Sweden, they just missed out. Actually, Swedish league has just finished, so they're going to have one of the longest winter breaks because they actually don't have any fixtures until February, pretty much, apart from the odd cup game. So Graham Potter's done an incredible job here, and playing against Arsenal, yeah, as the only English manager in European competition, will sort of be, he's the one person that people have been clamouring for in the media recently. Why aren't these English managers getting a chance? Well, here's an English manager that no one's heard of. Yeah. He's gone away and he's managed 7 years. Yeah, it might be in the Swedish division, but he's got that experience that apparently you can't get. And he's shown his credentials because, yeah, from fourth tier of Swedish football to knocking out, they knocked out Galatasaray in the playoff to get in the Europa League. They were level on points with Bilbao in their Europa League group, but came second based on head-to-head. So that journey's incredible, and I'm so excited to see what they can do against Arsenal.
To see them knock out Arsenal. Yeah.
So it's one thing, you know, managing in Sweden, being like the Fagan of Sweden and taking in a bunch of outcasts. Yeah. Sticking Annie and Oliver Twist up front.
Jeez.
Does that work in the Premier League where, you know, you can't necessarily take in all the rejects and make them something special?
I think we have to wait for Graham to come to the Premier League to prove it, surely. He's going to come over after they've beaten Arsenal, as I say.
Once he lands at the Hawthorns.
Yeah, I think it is, as Jake says, it does show that the lack of imagination, almost the lack of research on the part of a lot of these Premier League clubs to you know, we spoke about last time I was on the podcast, you know, Pulis, Pardew, Allardyce, all the same sort of managers getting the same jobs. But I think it'd be, as Jake says, very interesting to see how Potter gets on in this game, whether they can potentially get a result against Arsenal. And, you know, with all this media attention, it'd be very interesting to see if he moves on to another job in the near future.
So, Jake, you know, for the sake of English football, you probably want Arsenal to lose this, don't you?
Yeah,
definitely. No, I hope we absolutely smash them, to be honest. But
do you want to end Graham Potter's career?
Yeah. Graham Potter, expose him. No.
It's just Fagan. Fagan in Sweden.
I wish they weren't playing Arsenal because it would have been such a good story to see them go further. But I think Arsenal...
I mean, it probably will still be a good story to see them go further.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But you know what I mean? They're not going to go further. But he's recently said it's not David and Goliath, it's David and 10 Goliaths against Arsenal. And that speaks volumes for it. But again, the fact that no English clubs are taking the risk, when you look at how his team play, again, it's very interesting. You think it would suit English football down to a T, because he usually goes with a 4-4-2. He's heavily reliant on his wingers. In the Swedish league this season, as I said, they just finished fifth. They were top for dribbles per game, so they're a very high octane team, and they're trying to carry the ball
sounds
forward.
Sounds like a Swedish Mike Bassett.
They're trying to carry the ball forward using wingers, but they're also very good at creating out good chances, because in the Europa League, out of the 44 odd teams that were in it in the group stages, they were 37th for shots per game, but then they move up to 12th for shots on target per game. So he's created this side that are relying on their wingers to create chances and go past players, but then create good opportunities, not scoring loads of goals. So again, that's a 4-4-2 and a style that's direct, quick. That sounds like English football written all over it. So you think, if these managerial appointments, the merry-go-round that's just continued, if this next sort of cycle doesn't go well, Graham Potter's 46, 47 years old. He's
past it.
He's ready. He's ripe to be picked, I think. And it's just whether someone wants to make that huge leap from Swedish Premier League to English Premier League. And I understand that's a huge risk, but you can't argue with someone that's, whatever league you're in, from taking someone fourth division to a Europa League knockout stage, you've got to be a decent manager.
I'd love to see that happen, and I'd definitely be an advocate of that, but I don't... I mean, as you said, that the risks of being relegated, etc., are so big in the Premier League, in the Premier League, that clubs are scared to take that gamble. And I think when they do, and they talk of instilling a philosophy and a long-term plan, we saw that at Crystal Palace at the start of the season with Frank de Boer coming in, you know, all this big talk, and then they lose faith after four games. It doesn't quite work out, so... Unfortunately, you know, I haven't got much faith that clubs would give Graham Potter a chance or stick with it if they did. Mm. But you never know. Hopefully, once he beat Arsenal, then might get a chance.
The man of the moment, Sean Dyche, he went down with Burnley, didn't he?
Don't they Esther Sweden?
He went down with Burnley, came back up, and now he's in the Champions League places. So it shows that, like, again, there is precedent for English teams to have a bit of faith and to do well. Burnley are doing much better than all these teams that are swapping managers. So hire Graham Potter. Do it.
That's it. Done. Everyone, hire Graham Potter. Mm. He could have taken the Sunderland job.
Exactly.
Just think, he could have given up Europe. Could have given up Europe to get relegated from the Championship.
I think
with
he's
no
right.
home
I think
he's, wins. They're still not won at home, have they? In 2017?
No. I think Chris Coleman's there. Yeah, now, yeah. He's trying.
He's
brave
trying
man.
I really like the Wales Euros song by Manic Street Preachers. It's a really fun bit in it where they go through all the players' names, and frankly, it was a soundtrack of my Euros. That I supported England. On that completely irrelevant note.
Are you in it now? Yeah.
On that completely irrelevant note, let's move on to Stats Showdown. Stats Showdown. Okay, then. It's crunch time. Or as Jake would call it, referring to Dele Alli's passes, clutch time. No. Probably. I don't know how that works.
Yeah, I reckon.
It's big clutch daddy stat time.
It is indeed.
You both know the rules of the stat showdown. Best 2 out of 3.
Right.
Yeah. Impress me stats.
Yeah.
It's got to be snappy. It's got to be usable. I'm not going to sit there in the pub with Jimmy Mc hard looking bloke and reel off some 16 page piece of information about expected goals, right?
Yeah, I'm just thinking I've lost already now you said that. But I mean, you know, let's see how it goes.
Jimmy Mc hard looking face wants him snappy.
Oh, I know him, yeah.
And I want him snappy. So impress me. Jake, you're going first.
I'll go with my snappiest first. And this is just sort of a throwing a spanner in the works. The player that's been dispossessed the most in Europe's top five leagues this season, 58 times, is Lionel Messi.
Oh my God.
Oh, sell him. They should just go for a mistake that contract. I know. Jesus.
Getting his pocket picked.
Yeah.
By the Swedish Fagot.
And dispossessed means he's not even trying to dribble past someone and losing the ball. It's just someone nicking it off his toes.
What an idiot. He'll never make it.
Never rated him.
That's good.
I've got a snappy one as well. My snappiest one.
Good son.
Snappiest.
Did you know, Rob, that Stoke, of course, going through a bad patch at the moment, defeated by Burnley in midweek on a Tuesday night, as it were. Did you know?
And it was cold.
Yeah, of course, and windy. It's been 111 years since Stoke won away from home on a Tuesday night in the Premier League. 111 years.
That's brilliant. That's a really good one.
Yeah.
I came up with that myself.
And both kind of Messi related, because the biggest criticism I could ever have of Messi is he couldn't do it on a cold, wet Tuesday in Stoke.
Exactly.
It weren't wet this Tuesday, of course, though. It was just cold. No. But either way, that's a brilliant stat.
It's pretty good.
That's the Stoke basher of all stats.
Incredible.
Boltwood.
You said I'm 1-0 up. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying you're 1-0 up.
Unbelievable.
I'm saying are 1-0 up. And now's your chance to go 2-0 up. You take the front foot with this one, Boltwood.
Oh, dear. So, I thought it was interesting.
Conviction there.
This weekend, Julian Speroni is going to make his 401st appearance for Crystal Palace. Haven't made his 400th in midweek in that win over Watford. But did you know it's been 4,868 days since he made his debut for Crystal Palace back in 2004, Rob? Very different world. And no iPhones, no Twitter, no Facebook. Julian Speroni has basically seen the world change, revolutionised, in his spell in South London.
Oh, I think I've lost it now. Just that little story.
To be fair, yeah. The story was nice, but the stat is like...
He's been there for ages.
Someone's been there for ages.
You
could have said 13 years is 4,800 and something days.
Yeah, but, do you know what I mean? No. 2004, iPhones, coincidence. I don't know.
Jake?
Right, here we go. We talked about the Champions League draw and we mentioned briefly Man City versus Basel. The one person that will be licking his lips at that tie is actually Leroy Sané. Oh. And the reason why is because he could become the second player ever to score in his first four appearances in the Champions League knockout stages.
Wow. Yeah, but Rob, do you know Julian Speroni's been at Palace for ages.
Oh, 13 years is 4,800 days. Irrelevant. Irrelevant garbage. Jake, you've tied it up.
Yes. And just for reference, the first was Kylian Mbappe.
Oh, wow.
Incredible.
Jake's.
It's better, to be fair. Jake, comfortably.
Jake has the same relationship with Kylian Mbappe that Mbappe has with Ronaldo.
Yeah.
He's just got posters of Mbappe all over his wall.
Well, that's the poster, the bedroom wall derby, that Champions League time.
Bedroom wall derby.
That is the least catchy name for yeah. ever. I'll be on Sky Sports, no doubt.
All right, Jake, now's your chance.
All right, here Boltwood, we go.
Boltwood's trying to work out how many...
Bloody hell.
How many days it's been since England won the World Cup. Did you know it's been 6 million hours?
My last stat is looking ahead to the weekend and Arsenal play Newcastle.
Oh.
And Olivier Giroud.
Yeah.
Has played Newcastle 8 times in the Premier League.
Good for him.
Won all 8 and scored 8 goals. If he wins his 9th, that is the longest 100% record Arsenal have in their current squad.
Wow.
Of one team.
Yeah. So no one has beaten more teams in a row.
I feel like there's an opening here, Boltwood, because that was convoluted.
I'm going to try my best.
Bloody hell.
I don't have much on to
it. Jake's absolutely disgusted.
I'm rattled by that.
So, I mean, Jake mentioned it earlier. Harry Kane is 3 goals off of Alan Shearer's record for goals in the Premier League in a calendar year.
Before playing Brighton.
Is speaking on Wednesday.
Before playing all these teams. So he's only 3 short. I think he's going to do it. But the incredible thing is, at 33 goals already, he scored the same amount of goals on his own as Swansea and Burnley. And he scored more goals this year than Crystal Palace with 31, I should say, and West Brom with 30. Boom. Harry Kane is better, basically, than 4 Premier League clubs, essentially.
Yeah.
Again.
I mean...
Harry Kane has scored a lot of goals.
Fine.
Great stat.
Yeah, Harry Kane scored a lot of goals and then there's a lot of rubbish teams in the Premier League.
You're so wildly unimpressed by stats. So I like it.
I'd say, do you know what, lads, after a really impressive opening salvo from both of you, I think you've limped over the line there, but I'm going to say the winner. Just because it's easier. It's easier to... Oh, look, Jake's so upset.
Please tell me a while, just by saying Harry Kane scored those goals.
Just because it's easier to say it.
Shocking.
To old Flinty McHardface, or whatever I said his name was.
Jimmy.
I think it's... Boltwood's taking it home.
Papa, oh, come on. I'm shocked.
That's rattled shocked. Me,
I'm
that
not,
one.
I'm not exactly sure I deserve it either, but I'll take it.
Do you know what is more annoying is? Because if I had more time... There's another angle to the Giroud stat that I want to look for.
Yeah,
so I'm going to look for it and then tweet it when he wins for the ninth time against Newcastle on Saturday, and then you'll be like, oh, I wish I gave him the credit.
Jimmy McHardface isn't going to care, though.
If.
Boltwood, where can we find your incredibly informative information about time?
If you want to find some convoluted stats and just me rambling on, then come listen to the Front Three Football Podcast on iTunes and everywhere. Deezer as well, everywhere.
And Jake, how about you?
You can see my Olivier Giroud wonder stats on Twitter, and that's just at Jake Entwistle. Nearly got that wrong, and there's no H, remember?
It's never had an H. Not even once.
I just feel like if we get the new listeners, then they're going to put the H in and it's going to be like, I can't find him.
Jake's name has always been the same, as long as it's been called it.
That's a stat.
That's
a stat. That's Adam's stat next time, that is.
Wow. Jake is 24 years old, which is 6 million weeks. And you can find me at Jimmy McHardface or at Rob Armstrong _WH.
Can you change your Twitter?
I'm right. To Jimmy McHardface. At Rob Armstrong _WH. And you can find this podcast on Deezer, on iTunes, all the places where you find podcasts. Share it, review it. Take it to someone who likes time and the concept of time and breaking down time into hours rather than days.
Me.
And years.
Yeah.
And we'll see you next week, which is how many hours? What's 7 days from now?
Mate, give it a rest, yeah. I've won. That's all that matters.
We'll see you in 24 times 7 hours next week on Defending in Numbers.
Defending in Numbers is a Deezer Originals production. You can find and download more episodes on Deezer and all major podcast providers.